Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It's our monthly show on home maintenance. Hank Spies is here. Also, Scott Spies, both of them from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Between the two of them, I expect they could answer most of any question that people could think of asking here, anything that has to do with the various parts of the single-family home. If there's some problem, something needs to be repaired, you need some advice, you're thinking about making some changes, doing some remodeling, any and all of that, certainly welcome. I know they will do their best to help you out. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. At any point here, you have questions, you can give us a call. Thanks both to you, Beaner. Well,
nice to be back.
Appreciate it. We have several people ready to go here, and we'll start with someone in Watsika. That's on our line or toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you for taking my question, and my question is about insulation. I need to upgrade my crawl space insulation. My house is 44 years old, and the crawl space is four blocks high. I have six air vents, and the present insulation is an expandable tin foil that was installed between the floor joists about 30 years ago, and some of this has deteriorated, and I plan to remove all this insulation. So what's the best way to upgrade crawl space insulation?
Well, right now, the train of thought is to insulate the perimeter walls and the band joist area rather than the floors. There's always some heat gain out of the soil surface in the crawl space. The soil tends to stay at about 50, 55 degrees year-round. So if we insulate the perimeter walls, your block walls, you say four blocks high, you want to insulate probably about 12 or 14 inches below grade, so usually the top 2 feet of the concrete block wall, and then put some insulation up in the band joist area, and that way your heat sink or the soil surface will keep that crawl space 50 degrees. You get usually some heat ducts and such through the crawl space. Any heat loss from those ducts will warm the crawl space, and warm air rises, which rises in up and keeps your floors a little bit warmer. Also, it gives you just a little bit of gain in the summertime in that the 50-55 degree ground acts as a heat sink and helps absorb some of the heat out of the house. So it will actually help in the summertime as well.
Okay, just the perimeter, and I don't need to be concerned about putting insulation in between the floor joists.
Yeah, that'd be correct. I wouldn't bother doing the floor joists, just do the perimeter.
Okay.
Usually it's fairly simple. They can either spray on some insulation, a cellulose and glue mixture. It's a little more expensive. You can use a spray urethane. Or one of the new foam type insulations. The easy do-it-yourself cheapest way of doing it is to adhere styrofoam panels onto the walls, usually a 2-inch thick. Now you want to use an extruded foam board, not a bead board, because the bead board could hold a little bit of moisture, and a wet moisture or wet insulation doesn't insulate. So one of the extruded boards, commonly called a blue board or a pink board, with a little bit of construction adhesive on the block, and hold it in place. And then the space above the block, you can use fiberglass bat insulation.
Okay. I was reading a publication by the Missouri Department of Natural Resources and on energy issues and so forth. And they made the statement that you should insulate the crawl space only if it is dry all year. The floor is above is not insulated, and all the ventilation to the crawl space is blocked. Do they mean the little air vents?
Yes.
And those should be closed all year?
As long as the crawl space is dry, they should be closed all year.
Ah, okay.
Now, do you have plastic down in the crawl space?
Yes, but okay. I'm going to also replace that.
Okay. Sounds good. Leave them closed.
Okay. Now, does the addition of styrofoam on the walls have the potential for creating problems like providing safe passage for termites?
Well, If you've got termites, you have to take care of those with either soil poisoning or with one of the new bait systems that's out there. And
I don't presently have them, and I didn't want to create a situation that would, you know, be inviting to them. And so I was just, you know, wondering.
It's no more inviting than almost anything else.
Okay. And the installation of the plastic on the crawl space floor, that should be a plastic that's like 4 to 6 mil thick.
Yes.
And you overlap it.
You lap the joint 6 or 8 inches and let the plastic come up the walls about 4 to 6 inches.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. And just, this is something that I know you have talked about and recommended a lot over the years. If people have heard the show, they have heard this. But the idea is that if you have dirt in your crawl space, essentially dirt, the soil surface, you don't want that exposed because any moisture then that will come up through there is going to come up into the house. So that's why you put the plastic on top.
Exactly correct.
All right. And it doesn't, you don't have to tack it up to the sides. You don't have to glue it to the sides.
No.
It doesn't matter if it's because it's going to come down a little bit on the sides. That doesn't matter.
As a matter of fact, that way, if you get any water coming through the foundation, it will go under the plastic rather than on top of it.
Okay.
And we've been in many crawl spaces where the plastic actually was floating. And a wet crawl space is a problem, but water under the crawl, plastic is not.
Okay, so that's because that should keep it as long as it's under the plastic, then the evaporation's not going to, when it does eventually evaporate, it's not going to come up into the house. That's what you're trying to prevent.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Lafayette, line number one. Hello.
Hello. A curious question on a lot of items in the home supply stores. Are the words construction grade, sometimes contractor grade? What's that mean?
Good advertising. Nothing else.
Usually what I find on the contractor grade is it's one of the name brands that does not bother putting their name on it. The contractors don't need to pay for the actual name. So take, for instance, furnaces. There's probably only about 7 or 8 different furnace manufacturers out there, but there's 30 or 40 different brands of furnaces. So you're going to end up with the same furnace, whether or not it has one brand name on it or one of the lesser-known names on it. It's still effectively the same furnace. So when I see contractor grade, it usually means that they're, I don't want to say generic, but it's they're not putting the big name brand out there that requires all the extra publicity, the extra advertising to try and sell the tie-in stuff. The contractors just want something that works that they can put out there.
Well, and it doesn't have any meaning about quality.
Absolutely not.
Okay, thanks.
All right, well, the next caller is in Strawn, line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an old farmhouse that I converted the attic to storage. I laid down OSB over the rafters with cellulose in it, and I insulated the roof. I was wondering, there's a lot of vents up there. Is that okay what I did?
Well, generally speaking, we like to have the attic space ventilated, so I probably wouldn't have insulated the roof.
Okay, well, I've got about 5 or 6 vents in the roof that are, you know, are free and clear, and then I've got a couple on the wall. I just wondered, I thought I heard sometime, one partially on your program, where not to insulate the roof, and I just wondered if that was a mistake.
Well, it kind of depends on how it's done. We're really looking for ventilation between the cold roof surface and the insulation, because if you have any warm, humid air in the house, that moisture wants to condense on a cold surface. Well, if your cold surface doesn't have a ventilated area, we can get some condensation on the bottom of the roof sheathing or even get a little bit of frost in the wintertime, and that moisture doesn't dry out, particularly if the insulation is directly against the bottom of the roof sheathing. In that particular case, there really needs to be a good vapor barrier on the warm side of the insulation to help keep the humidity from the house from getting to that roof surface. That's why we like to see the floors insulated, is we can ventilate the attic. If you put the insulation up in the rafters, such as what you've done, it's really a good idea to leave an inch or two of space, an air chute, which is a plastic spacer that you can put in there, to allow some type of ventilation so we don't have a wet surface that the insulation sits directly against, or a place where we can get some condensation so we don't rot the roof sheathing.
Okay. I just wondered, should I cut back my insulation on the roof where it comes down and it meets the ceiling rafters? If I cut back, 18 inches or something there, do you think that would maybe alleviate any future problems or something? I don't seem to be getting any kind of condensation or moisture up there.
No, in that case, I would leave it alone.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. Let's go to line three. This is Melvin. Line three.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah. Hi.
Hello.
Yeah.
We want to add a bedroom in our basement, and we're wanting to replace a concrete block window, enlarge that, or a glass block window, enlarge that for a regular size or a smaller window that could be used as an emergency exit. Is that possible in a poured concrete basement?
Well, you're going to have to get somebody with a good set of concrete saws and cut it out. The code requirements for emergency escape access for a bedroom in a basement requires an openable area of 5.7 square feet and with a minimum dimension of 22 inches. Generally speaking, they put in an oversized window well outside so that you can climb out into that window well and then get out that way.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I need to know.
Yeah, as I say, there are various masonry contractors that have some pretty good saws that can cut a hole in them.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. We are talking here this morning about home maintenance, something we do monthly on the show, always on a Monday. Our guests, Hank Spies and Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Your questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Back here locally to someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I recently installed a high-efficiency furnace, and I noticed that where the vent goes out through the wall, there is a very small crack around the pipe, and I'm wondering, shouldn't that be sealed?
Yes.
What should I use?
Probably one of the acrylic or silicone caulks.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps both inside and outside the
yes.
Wall?
Yes, I would seal both places.
And in reference to the earlier caller, I have some areas under the floor, between the floor joists, that I'd like to insulate. However, there's paneling that's been put up that goes over that area. Would it be possible to inject foam behind that paneling, or would it just blow the foam, paneling out?
Depending on the foam, it would probably blow the paneling off. But I don't see any reason for doing it. To insulate it there at all.
You think that would be a good enough insulation?
I would think that if you've got the insulation on the perimeter, so the crawl space wall itself stays in the 50-degree range, we're not going to gain much of anything by putting insulation in the floor.
Well, no, this is an outside basement wall. It's not a crawl space.
Okay. In that case, you want to insulate down at least 2 feet below grade.
Okay. It sounds like I need to go down below that area.
Yeah. With basement walls, definitely you should insulate them from the band joist all the way down to at least 2, probably better 3 feet below outside grade. And there are some foams that don't exert much of any pressure that could be injected in there without any too problem. But by the time you fix the holes for that, you may as well have pulled the paneling off and done the job right.
You're probably right. In the part of the basement where there is no paneling, I suppose the best thing would be to put a 2-inch blue board.
You can't leave blue board exposed because of the possibility of fire. It produces some extremely toxic smoke.
Okay,
so,
what would
so
you suggest?
It has to be covered with a fire-resistant material. Basically, you'd have to, should fur it out with 2x2s or something like that. Put on your foam and then cover it with drywall.
Okay.
For fire protection.
You'd use foam there, too.
Probably.
And I could inject foam into the space between the floor joists.
Yes, you could, or else you can just cut a piece of fiberglass bat and stick up there. Generally speaking, if you buy four-foot-long bats and cut them in three pieces, they just jam in there quite nicely.
I see. Yeah, I guess the only problem would be where there is wiring. The person who built the house liked a sound system, and there are a lot of old wires going along the side of the basement wall.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose some of those could just be taken out.
Some could, and you can definitely spray in some foam in that area.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Others are certainly welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. We're clear here for the moment. We'll see if we can get some more calls. Anything in particular that you would say to people they should be thinking about just based on the time of year that we are at?
Well, be sure your furnace filters are clean because we're starting to use those quite a bit these mm-hmm. days. And if you have an old furnace, more than 15 years old, certainly if more than 20, you ought to seriously consider replacement because we've made tremendous gains in the efficiency of furnaces. And as we jack the price up on natural gas, operating cost goes significantly higher. But mm-hmm. we're talking about one of the old ones are in the 60 to 70% efficient range. Well, the worst one you're allowed to build today is 78%, and 90% is readily available. So, and while you're at it, you want to look at the central air conditioning system as well, because we have effectively doubled the efficiency of air conditioning in the last 10 years. So I realize that we're looking at some big expenditures, but you're paying for new equipment and not getting it if you don't make the change now.
Yeah, all right. We have some more callers here. In fact, the lines have just filled up, so let's get back to it. And we'll start with Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. We moved this summer into a 100-year-old four-square house in Urbana here. It has a hipped roof and dormers, and there's not much attic insulation. There seems to be kind of a half-hearted attempt to put battings in the roof rafters because there was also like a half-hearted winterized room up there. So what we're hoping to do is, in a year or two, finish that room. And I've also noted that the soffits are in pretty bad condition. So we were hoping to repair the soffits this summer. My question has to do with both winterization and ventilation up there.
Well, basically, we would just assume the attic be ventilated. You probably would need to get some air chutes. These are plastic units that slide along the bottom of the roof, stick down into the overhang so that it maintains an airflow mm-hmm. as you add insulation in the ceiling
mm-hmm.
of the rooms below.
Mm-hmm.
And so that maintains that. And if we can keep that ventilation going and then insulate the room rather than the attic rafters.
Okay. Okay, so if we, so basically right now, first of all, the soffits are just continuous wood. When we refinish those, should we install soffit vents?
Absolutely.
Okay, and like continuous or?
Either one. You can put either individual grills or you can leave a screen slot open.
Okay, and then you would recommend insulating the attic floor outside the finished room and then the kind of wall, the ceiling and the walls of the finished room rather than the ceiling. Okay, and with a hipped roof, it comes to a point. How do you ventilate a roof like that?
Well, you put vents in the roof itself rather than on the ridge.
Okay.
And they'll usually take care of the multiple varieties of mushroom vents. that you can put in the roof that goes due to the ventilation.
Okay. And then just real quickly, last question. We have a chimney that currently nothing uses. I think we had an old coal furnace, but it's now a modern furnace that vents out through the wall. So we have kind of this old chimney. There was a brick missing in the basement, and I noticed like cold air was kind of coming in through that, and I blocked it with expanding foam. But is that actually important to ventilate the chimney? Do I need to have that space open, that missing brick?
No, not really. And then when you re-roof, I would cut off the chimney in the attic and just roof over the opening.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call. Next, we'll go to Newman, and this is line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
What do you recommend for moss on your north side of the house? I've got it on the roof, on my porch, and also on the siding. What do you recommend for that as far as cleaning it? Is there anything that would eventually keep it from coming back?
Well, generally speaking, you're going to want to scrub it with a solution of about one part of household chlorine bleach to water, and that will tend to kill it. However, you have to realize that this is growing on the dirt. It's not growing on the siding, so you have to wash the siding every once in a while. As far as the roof is concerned, there is a product on the market called Shingle Shield, which is zinc strips that go along the top row of shingles, tucked under the top of it, and our acid rain washes enough zinc oxide down, it kills the moss on the roof.
All right, sir. Thank you much.
All right, well, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Rantoul. This will be line number 2. Hello.
Hi, mm-hmm. I have a question about my bathroom venting. Here and lately, when the wind's out of the north, I can get a sewer smell in my bathroom.
That's pretty unusual, yes. You almost need to check to make sure that the sewer vents that come up through the roof are protruding far enough above the roof. If somebody doing a re-roof had shortened it or if it had dropped down, you could be building up a wind pressure against the roof. It should extend about 12 inches above the roof line. You don't want to get it too tall, but you need to make sure that it does extend approximately 12 inches above that, above the or through the roof, so that we can get the ventilation, proper ventilation. Is there any obstructions near it, or chimneys, or anything like that that would block wind or create a wind pocket?
Well, the way I understand, it's vented into the attic.
Well, that would be part of the problem. The only way you're going to get sewer gases or a sewer odor back in the house is through the plumbing vent, not through the bathroom vent fan. Your plumbing vent must go up out through the roof. We like to see the vent fan go through the roof, but if it's a well-insulated attic, it's not quite as critical. But the only way you should be able to get sewer gases back into the house is if the vent pipe is not extended through the roof far enough or not extended through the roof at all. I have, in my many, many attics that I've inspected, occasionally find a roof vent that was, or a plumbing vent that's just stubbed up through into the attic. And, yes, that can create an odor problem.
Okay. I've lived here about 10 years, and this is the first time I've noticed it. So I'm wondering if, do you think that vent might have gotten clogged somehow?
Well, it's possible. It could be that some one of the ducts has come loose in the attic.
So, but you were saying before it was a plumbing problem?
In order to get that kind of an odor back through there, yes, it's something with the plumbing vent system. The vent system is designed so that when you run an appliance or flush a toilet or something like that, that we can allow some air to get in behind the water so it doesn't pull traps dry and such. That's where your sewer odor is going to be coming through, because those are open to the sewer line, and those are supposed to be vented up through the roof. It's possible, particularly if you've had a new roof put on, that somebody, when putting in a plumbing vent, flashing, moved the vent or disconnected a piece of pipe up in the attic to where it's no longer extended through.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll have to have it checked out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very good. We'll continue here. Our guests, Hank Spies and Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. This is a program we do once a month, always on a Monday, to answer questions on home maintenance. And if we can help you out, I know they'll try. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Champagne next, line three.
Yeah, I just have a couple of simple questions, or I hope simple. But one is, there's this water. I just came home out of town after a few days yesterday morning, and I'd noticed previously as well, right behind our Wheel McLean gas-fired boiler, in between that and the chimney, we live in an old house in the basement, there's this small amount of, it looks like water, that's built up, and it's not dripping from above because the toilet is above that, and I've checked, it's completely dry. So I'm trying to figure out where that water is coming from. The second thing is, I was wondering whether it could be coming from the chimney down. I can't figure it out. But the other thing is that I have these, in terms of winterizing, I have these three huge windows about 5 feet by 3 feet looking out toward the east and on my first floor. But unfortunately, they're not double-paned. And so our gas prices are either extremely expensive in the winter, our gas bill. And I obviously would like to do something about that. And what would you recommend for insulation purposes or, for that matter, whether I should just get to make sure I get double panes and that sort of thing?
Hello? Well, I don't know that you need a double pane. Mm-hmm. With a window that large, just some type of removable storm panel. Mm-hmm. To create a dead air space next to the window. Among other things, your body acts as a radiant heater, so if you're next to that window, you're going to feel cold. So what we want to do is kind of give a little bit of an insulation buffer so you feel more comfortable in that room. So therefore, you end up feeling more comfortable with the furnace set or temperature set at a little bit lower setting.
Right.
You could make it one out of usually plastic. Being a 3 foot by 5 foot, you may need to get somebody to make you a custom window frame that you could set in place or clip in place that would help insulate that window. And you're right, at these energy prices, that would be probably worthwhile endeavor to get into. I don't know that replacing the glass with double pane is the answer when, you don't want to ruin the character of the house by changing all the windows.
Right.
Whereas you can put in a removable storm panel. I've actually seen them either on the inside or the outside. The only trick is you have to remember that whichever window is on the inside has to be the one that seals the tightest so we don't get moisture condensation in between the two. I have, for short periods of time, even used the shrink wrap plastic kit where you put the tape around the windowsill and put the plastic on there and heat it up with a hair dryer so it dries nice and tight to where you don't really see it when you're looking at it.
Okay.
And that works well as also.
Great.
As far as water behind a boiler, there's a couple of different places it can be coming from. Of course, the worst one would be an actual pinhole in the boiler, but that's usually not the case because that's pressure fed. If you might want to look at the pressure gauge on the boiler. If it looks like it's been coming up above, say, 18 to 20 pounds, I would call a furnace or a boiler man. What can happen is the expansion tank. When you heat water, it expands. So there is an expansion tank on the system that is partially filled with air and partially full of water. If the expansion tank has lost most of its air, when the burner fires and you heat up the water and it goes to expand, you can actually build the pressure up high enough that the pressure relief valve will then drip out a few drops of water as that expansion occurs. And then as soon as it cools back down again, the automatic fill valve on the boiler will say, hey, they were short just a little bit of water, and so it'll open the valve and throw a little bit more water back in the system. So that's one thing to check. And also it is possible to be coming from the chimney. You can get some condensation in the chimney. Really, it hasn't been cold enough yet that I would expect to see that at this point in time. Usually the condensation, if you put a higher efficiency furnace into an older brick chimney where the brick stays relatively cold and the furnace fires, the condensation from the combustion gases will condense in that chimney and then drip down. So it's
ours
possible.
Ours is fairly old. It's a brick chimney, so I was just,
How old's the boiler?
The boiler is not that old. I think it's only maybe, we just bought the house a couple years ago, but it's about 10 years old, I think. It's a very good boiler. And I had a guy out here like a month or two ago, and I forgot to mention because I really hardly noticed it. I just noticed these little stains in the floor, but I actually saw the water this time, so it sort of made me concerned. So.
Well, the two things that I would check first would first of all be the pressure gauge on the boiler to make sure that when it's running that it's not getting up too high.
Right.
A two-story house, 12 to 15 pounds of pressure is usually about what we're looking for. On a one-story house, you can usually get by with somewhere between 8 and 12.
Okay.
It takes a little bit more pressure to get the water up to the upper levels.
Okay.
Once you've checked the pressure on the system, it'd be a good idea to check, double check the chimney to make sure it's lined. When you have a chimney that's that old, quite often they did not have a liner. When it had an oil-fired or coal-fired furnace, we kept a constant heat source in the chimney. It always stayed warm. When you switch it to a gas-fired unit that cycles on and off, the chimney can get colder. Those warm combustion gases go up in there and hit that cold brick and start condensing moisture.
Oh, really?
And a lot of times, in order to heat the house with the old furnace, it had to be huge, much larger burner capacity than the new one. So the chimney may be oversized for your new high-efficiency furnace. So we're not getting an efficient or effective draft. So I would, if the pressure seems to be all right on the tank, I would definitely have somebody take a look at that chimney, make sure it's lined, make sure that we've got a properly sized chimney for your boiler.
And also the chimney, is that dangerous, or is it just sort of a nuisance that the water is flowing through? I'm just curious what the effect on the chimney would be. Or,
well, the condensate from the flue gases is fairly acidic. We've got some carbonic and sulfuric acids that can form with that condensation. And while it's not in, only in extreme cases does it affect the brick, but it will affect the mortar between the bricks. So, yes, it does deteriorate the chimney on the inside.
Oh, I see. Oh, we'd had some. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, that tells me a lot. Yeah, that might be related to a problem.
Anytime you put a gas-burning appliance into a brick chimney, there must be either a clay liner or one of the metal liners or a mortar liner, but something has to protect that chimney from the effects of the flue gases.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll keep on going here. We have a number of other callers. And next, Bourbonnais, line one, right here. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I've been considering a tankless water heater. I know they're more expensive up front, but I guess the savings ultimately are worth it. I seem to recall that you had some reservations about them, but I can't remember what they were.
Well, one of the problems that we've run into is parts availability. Many of the older tankless ones were brought in from overseas, and they're very difficult to get any parts if anything goes wrong.
That would be Bosch?
Bosch should be all right. It was the Japanese ones that really caused us the problem.
Okay.
But I question whether the efficiency is that much better.
Really?
The main reason we use them is because they don't take the space.
Well, that's not an issue for me.
Okay, that's what I was suspecting. But with the insulation that we're getting in water heaters anymore, if it is one that uses a pilot light, generally speaking, you're not going to make any significant savings.
Really?
Because you've got a pilot light on your regular water heater, and actually they are so well insulated nowadays that unless you are actually using the water, the pilot light more than makes up for the heat loss from the tank.
Really? And, of course, that uses next to no fuel.
Well, very little at least, but we put recorders on them and find out if you, in the morning, it's hotter than the thermostat setting.
Uh-huh.
Just from the heat from the pilot light.
So, well, I'm in an all-electric house, so I guess I wouldn't have a pilot light.
No, then you would not have a pilot light. You may make some savings on an all-electric, but again, they're not going to be huge.
You mean a tankless?
Right, for a tankless.
Okay.
But
okay.
Considering the difference in initial cost, it's going to take quite a while to pay for it.
Huh.
It's one of those we really haven't checked into it, but I think a lot of the energy savings, quote-unquote, that they are professing with the new tankless systems, they're not necessarily comparing apples to apples, which is a fairly common advertising ploy. They may be saying we're saving so much over this particular water heater. Well, they're going to pick the least efficient water heater on the market that they want to compare to so that their numbers can look the best.
Sure.
And by the time you do put out the expenditure for the tankless system, you stop and think, okay, how much energy am I really using to heat water? How long is it going to take me to recuperate that? And if it looks like it's going to be a 10 or 12 year process, my guess is the tankless is going to need a little bit more maintenance in that period of time than a standard tank-type water heater, which is fairly maintenance-free. So it may not be a true energy savings in the long run.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Can I ask another question?
Yeah, sure.
I just moved into this house, and one of the reasons I moved is to get away from mold in my old house. And now that I'm here, I find that sometimes from the kitchen drains, and they're, you know, it's a bivalve sink, so to speak. There's two separate sinks. A strong moldy smell comes up, but not all the time. And I tried pouring, what seemed like half a gallon of bleach into one of them, and it didn't make a bit of difference.
I'm wondering about your venting system, whether it's working the way it should.
Yeah.
And but generally speaking, you shouldn't be able to get anything back through the drain as long as there's water in the trap.
Yeah.
So
what do I do?
Well, if you've got a mold smell in the kitchen area, the first thing I'd do is go down in the crawl space and look and see if we've got any wet floors. Look for any condensation in that area. Oftentimes with, depending on the age of the house, if they run the drain lines through the walls, you can get a cold spot that will grab some condensation. A little bit of humidity in the house will condense there. Usually not enough to create mold because you have to have an almost constant moisture source. But if you have all the escutcheons or the trim ring around the sink, a little water drips in behind it, some of that can get down underneath the kitchen cabinet. So the easiest thing to do to start out is go down underneath crawl space basement, look around that kitchen drain lines and all the water line protrusions and make sure that you don't see water stains or indications of any current moisture activity.
One of the things particularly to check is if you have an ice maker on your refrigerator, check the connection between that line that goes to the ice maker and the main wire, because if you get a little bit of a drip there, that's a possibility. Occasionally we run into problems where they hook the dishwasher in, that we will get a drip that will enough to get to grow a little mold.
Well, thank you for those ideas, but I have no question but that it's coming out of the drain. You stand over it and it wafts up, and if you put the lid on the drain, it goes away. And there isn't a moldy smell in the kitchen per se. It's just coming from those two sinks.
I have no idea what may be in those traps, but as long as the trap has water in it, we're not getting sewer gas back. So you may be growing something in the trap, and certainly the bleach should have taken care of that.
Okay, I think they're PVC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. That's even less likely to be a problem.
Okay. Well, okay. Do you have any
without being there
kind of
and taking something apart?
That?
Boy, there can't be much help, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
We got about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. It's our monthly show on home maintenance, and our guests are Hank Spies and Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. If you have a question, you give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And next is Urbana, line two.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
My question is about the attic. I have the floor of the attic has insulation on it, and then I have a small screened window on the north side and another one on the south side, which I leave open in the summer because I have an attic fan. But my question is, do I leave those open all winter or do I close them in the winter?
Well, it kind of depends on how tight the attic is. Usually a house that has windows in the attic is a fairly old house.
It is.
And usually the old houses are not as tightly built as the new houses, so I would say that you could go ahead and close those windows, that you should still have enough attic ventilation. When you get a cold snap like we had this morning where we get a bit of frost, you look up in the attic and see if there's any frost or condensation on the nail heads or the bottom of the roof sheathing. That would indicate that we do need a little bit more ventilation. But generally with an old house like that, it should be loose enough. The attic should be large enough that I doubt that that's going to be a problem. Okay. I would recommend shutting them.
Shutting. So, but if they're shut and I go up there and see frost on the nails or whatever, then I need to leave them open.
Well, we could open them for more ventilation, but also you want to try and figure out where your moisture source is. Because in order for that frost to occur, there's got to be humidity or moisture coming from somewhere in the house.
Usually. Oh, okay.
I've got some very interesting photos over the years of frost balls on the nail heads that are about the size of a golf ball, just from the humidity and moisture coming up through the house. And the one particular instance that comes to mind is one where I was called to a condo association that was relatively new, and everybody thought there was roof leaks. And I took one look at the bottom of the roof sheathing and said, huh, somebody forgot the plastic in the crawl space. So moisture in the bottom of the roof sheathing, it's got to be have a moisture source from someplace. Ventilating it is one answer, but finding the moisture source is the other.
Okay, so it's probably from the kitchen or the bathroom then, isn't it?
Basement or crawl space?
I have a basement.
Okay. My guess is you don't have a moisture problem up there. If you do, then yes, it would be a bathroom vent fan going up in there or the kitchen range hood going up that direction. But my guess is you will, if you close those windows, you will not find that that humidity problem.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks. Well, if you have a basement and if it's a damp basement, could there be enough moisture? Because, you know, eventually that moisture is going to make its way up and it is going to go in the attic. Could that put enough moisture into the attic so that you could see that same?
Yes, it could. And there may also be some air movement alongside the pipe. Plumbing pipe penetrations, and those have to be sealed tightly.
Okay. Okay, well, let's keep going here. We'll go to Bloomington, Illinois, line 4.
Yeah,
hello.
Yeah. Can you still buy the central air, the old 10-seer central air, a new one? Can you buy those?
Only if somebody has it in stock. Ones have to be 13s.
Is it legal to install them and buy them?
You can buy them and install them. You just can't manufacture them.
Oh, okay. Do you think any of the suppliers still have them? Is there strong demand for the old ones? I know the new ones are so much more expensive.
Well, no, I would say there is not. But the big difference is the new ones are bigger and the coils may not fit in the furnace. So it's perfectly possible that someone still has a couple of old ones around.
The coils on the new 13s won't fit in your existing
In some cases, it won't.
Oh, I see.
They are also available up as high as 18, but I can almost guarantee you that the coil is not going to fit in the furnace.
I see. In another matter, I got a steam boiler, and I extended I guess you'd call it almost a room addition. I extended the existing radiator 8 feet, and I was told that steam is under pressure, and the pipe doesn't have to raise. It can level, and I extended the pipe 8 feet, and it level. I put the radiator in, and now I'm hearing a lot of gurgling, like there's water stuck in the pipe.
The return side does have to have a certain amount of slope, so it'll gravity drain.
Yeah, I did do that turn side, but I'm not getting much heat into the radiator. I think there's water stuck in the supply side. Because I can hear it.
That's possible. Generally speaking, yes, there's pressure. That's why you're hearing the gurgling, is that the pressure is forcing the steam past the water.
Yeah, usually 2 to 3 pounds on a steam system, a little bit more if you've got a two-story house. Well, my question is, if you've got a system that's got a two-pipe radiator, have you considered switching it over to a pumped hot water system instead of a steam system? I think you'll have an energy savings, plus you'll find that it's probably more comfortable.
Well, I've heard Hank mention that. No, it's a newer steam system, so I don't think I'd convert. I have had hot water systems, and I agree with you. They're more comfortable. You don't get the extremes. Hank mentioned that gurgling is the steam going past the water. I was thinking of even tearing up the floor and draining that so so-called gap.
Well, it'll probably just come right back, because whenever it gets cool enough, the steam will condense back into water.
So ideally, that 8-foot extension should have been elevated higher, have had a slope, a more slope. A
little bit of slope to it, yeah.
Would that solve it if I get in there, tear up the floor, and slope that pipe?
It may. I don't know. It all depends on the specific way the pipes are run and this sort of thing. It's possible that it would.
Yeah, because I don't hear that on any of the other pipes where it's gurgling like that, so I assumed. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. Let's go to Champagne next, line 3. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about I'm putting a new sump pump basin in, and I'm having a hard time going from a ceramic 5-inch pipe into the 4-inch basin. And I've tried getting, I found a 6-inch to 4-inch converter, but there's not enough room to actually shove it in enough where it works. Any suggestions?
Are we talking about an existing perimeter tile drain coming into the sump pump? Is that
yes? What? Yeah, it's existing. It's ceramic and it's 5-inch. I've gone to a few hardware stores, and they just don't have any 5-inch converters to 4-inch.
What are you trying to pipe to? Are we...
Into the sump, a new sump pump basin.
So you're putting it, okay. You're dropping a new sump pump basin into your current sump. Is that what you're...
Yeah.
Okay. It really shouldn't need to be a tight fit if you've got an existing sump basin. First of all, why are you putting in a new sump?
Oh, the old one, it's not covered. It's just, it just goes into like a pottery, just into a pottery basin, and the sump pump just shoots out. It's nothing covering, so that moisture is actually creating a mold problem in the crawl space.
Well, it doesn't sound typical. I'm not sure I'm completely understanding what you're doing. I mean, if there is already an existing sump, you could make a lid or something that would go over the top of it. If you've got mold in the crawl space, it sounds to me like we have a moisture problem, which the sump pump hopefully is taking care of, and we're getting some condensation down there. One thing to remember is that a sump pump is a solution to a symptom, not a solution to a problem. If you've got water in the crawl space, the solution is not always how do I pump it out, but how do I keep it from getting there. So you might want to spend a little bit of time working on where is the moisture source, what's causing the moisture to come into the crawl space that we have to pump out. As far as your specific question, which is going to be to switch from one size tile to another, you may have to actually get a plumber to come up with a 5-inch fitting, because most of the do-it-yourself stores don't necessarily run in 5-inch. They usually go 1.5 to 3, 4, up to 6. So it may be hard to find that. But check with one of your regular lumber yards or builder supplies rather than the big box stores, and you might be able to find one.
Okay, another quick question on the perimeter of the crawl space. I've noticed a couple of cracks in the foundation. And at one point, a previous owner tried to cover up some of the cracks with some mud, some cement mud, and it's still, the cracks going through there. It's not big enough where you could see light out or anything like that. But at what point do I become concerned with those cracks?
When they leak water.
Okay.
If the crack is a fairly straight crack, if you look at it and you don't see any horizontal movement, in other words, one side hasn't dropped up or down, you're usually in pretty good shape. Some small cracking is normal because, contrary to popular belief, concrete does move a little bit. When poured concrete will tend to shrink, and concrete blocks will tend to grow. So there is a potential for some small cracks. So almost every crawl space that I get into has some type of cracking, either in the block or in the mortar joints of the blocks, or even in the basement poured foundation wall. So unless there's been some vertical movement where you can actually see where one has gone up or down, I probably wouldn't worry about it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. We'll see if we can get at least one more. Caller's in Flossmoore, line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
It's not really seasonal, but I've been thinking about this all summer. We have a story-and-a-half house, and we like to run a fan at night and cool it down. And I got this. We had a fan for 19 years. It was a really good patent fan. Did a good job, you know, standing. I'd like to put in an exhaust fan in the wall, like you have in the kitchen. Do you know of such a thing? We got one contractor who came up with $4,000 to do this, which I said, well, it costs more than our furnace.
Do you do any air conditioning?
Oh, yeah.
In that case, I would forget the whole thing because you should never bring in outside air.
You feel that way, but that's not the way I feel. I like the outside air. So
well, yes.
Way to get it in. And we have casement windows. We can't put in a window fan.
Yeah, there are definitely essentially kitchen ventilation fans. The older ones, rather than being a range hood, were a through-the-wall unit, and those are still available. I tend to agree that the $4,000 figure is extremely high for doing something like that. Yeah. Even with a masonry or a brick exterior, you should be able to get
it's
it done
not.
For
it. It's up on the second story. It's wood. Well,
okay. If you will leave your address with our engineer, there is a company that does make these.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
All right, well, put you back on hold, and we'll get that information. And I think we are just about at the point where we're going to have to stop. Maybe we can try and do one more if we can be quick. Olney is the caller, line two. Hello.
Hi. I'm wondering about powder post beetles, if you can tell me if that's a way to detect how extensive a damage would be, and can they be treated, and how expensive does that tend to be?
Well, very, very rarely do we run into powder post beetles anymore because usually they live just under the bark, and the kiln drying of the lumber usually kills them off. If you've got them active, then it was lumber that was cut and not dried. It's very difficult to treat them. As far as damage, you have to kind of stick a screwdriver in there and see how much damage there is to the wood, see how soft things are.
All right. I think that's about what we can do. We'll just say for this time around, thanks very much.
Yeah, very well.
Hank Scott from the Spies Home Inspection Service. We do this show with one or the other of these Spies once a month, give you the opportunity to ask questions about home maintenance. And we'll do it again next month.